Okay, you are live tonight.
Okay. All right, I have 6 o'clock now and we're live. So I'm going to open the Hood River City Council meeting of August 10th. Go ahead and call that meeting to order. And we will have business from the audience first. And I believe we have one speaker signed up. And that is Mary Ruth Petzing. Jonathan, if you want to promote her to a panelist.
Mary Ruth, you can unmute yourself and give your presentation.
Good evening. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Mary Ruth Petzing. I live at 1806 Avalon Drive in Hood River. Last month, I listened to the City Council identify priorities for legislative advocacy. The number one selection by the council members was for increased mental health resources. I also listened to a presentation from the Hood River Police Department in which I heard the opinion that Mid-Columbia Center for Living can't increase their services because they are overwhelmed and maxed out. In fact, the direct response to a call for mental health resources to replace a police response to non-criminal mental health calls was that there are no mental health resources available. So let's make mental health resources available. As far as I can tell, mental health appears nowhere in the 224-page City of Hood River budget. This is not surprising. The Hood River County budget has only $50,000 a year for mental health. Our local mental health services organization is facing a challenging fiscal outlook, a substantial decrease in both budget and staffing. I am not an expert in their budget, but my understanding is they are facing a large shortfall for the 2019-2020 fiscal year and an almost 10% decrease in their budget for the 2020-2021 fiscal year, and that they are looking at cutting over 14 FTE. At the same time, our city budget has increased, as has the budget for the police department. The City Council today is being asked to approve over $100,000 for the purchase of new police vehicles. I applaud the city for purchasing hybrid vehicles. It's a manifestation of an avowed value, and it's something I want to see. But I don't see such a manifestation of the recognition of the mental health needs in our community. I agree with the City Council's assessment that mental health services are critically needed in our local community. I appreciate the identification of that need as a priority for advocacy at the state level. But I urge the City Council to use local power and resources to invest in local services to meet local needs. Reimagining public safety means acknowledging that we will pay for mental health care. We will pay for it either by hiring counselors and social workers and outreach workers to meet people's basic needs, or we can pay for it with police and jail and EMS. I'm asking that the City Council be bold in planning for our future by committing to redistributing funds to meet your priorities and our priorities for community well-being. Thank you for your time.
Oh, Mary, you're on mute.
Sorry about that. I said Mary Ruth was the only one who had signed up for business from the audience. Thank you so much. So now we have our presentation from Columbia Area Transit regarding solar initiatives that they're working on.
Mayor, I do not recognize any of the IDs from our CAT partners. If a Hans-Peter Fink is using a non-name Zoom ID, would you please raise your hand I'm going to go and use some email correspondence and see if I can reach out to Kat. If we can return to this later on, would that be all right?
Sure. I don't think that's a problem. This next item could take maybe a half an hour, but I think we'll just go with our next item on the list, which is a public hearing. And then hopefully they'll come on and give their presentation after that. Are you good with that, Will?
Yeah, that works for me.
Okay. So now we're going to have a public hearing on Ordinance 2055, Transient Lodging Tax Code Update. So I actually have a script that I need to read because this is a public hearing. This is the time scheduled for a public hearing on Ordinance 2055, amending Title V of the Hood River Municipal Code by amending Chapter 9, retitled Transient Lodging Tax of the Hood River Municipal Code. We'll now hear the city's staff report, and Will will give us that report.
Thank you, Mayor. So transient lodging tax is the city's second largest source of general fund revenue, funding public safety, parks, planning, and all the general governmental functions of the city. And it is the largest tax that we administer ourselves as property taxes administered for us by Hood River County. So all that is to say that it's worth making sure that our code is current and up to date with contemporary changes in the industry. This update has been waiting in the wings for a little bit until we've had time as staff to wrap our arms around it. You might remember in 2018, we brought a transient lodging tax update that was pretty much a wholesale swap for League of Oregon City's boilerplate. We had several public hearings on that, and we just found too many little problems with the LOC boilerplate. So we scrapped that, and we've been moving forward with this. What you have in front of you today is a more targeted, kind of surgical approach to just changing the specific items that are needed rather than a whole wholesale swap out. So the history of our lodging tax in Hood River goes back to 1981 when it was first established and essentially has been remained mostly untouched since then. There was slightly changed to increase the tax rate, change how it was distributed amongst for general governmental services versus tourism promotion. But other than that, it's significantly unchanged from the early 1980s. Since that time, we all know that Airbnb and VRBO, these booking intermediaries that work online, have come into the scene and become dominant amongst vacation owners. So this tax code update is primarily targeted at bringing in booking intermediaries as a defined entity and making them jointly responsible for collecting and remitting tax. We're not the first ones to do this, and we're modeling after language in Corvallis and Portland that we're able to get Airbnb to begin remitting. And the proposed language in front of you has been reviewed by Airbnb representatives, and they said that it is sufficient for them to start collecting and remitting in the city, which they said now that they have no problem doing. And why this is also important is when you're dealing with individual property owners that aren't business owners, like say a large hotel, you can get a lot of inconsistencies in how people report their level of knowledge, their level of acumen. And it's just much more efficient and more accurate if we work through the large booking intermediaries rather than relying on each sort of mom and pop single property owner to fill out their tax return correctly every month. So this will also improve tax collection to some degree by improving the consistency in the way that taxes are calculated. In addition to having the transient lodging intermediaries collect and remit, there's several other modernization of the code that's needed since it hasn't been really updated since 1981. We're explicitly authorizing online tax filing where the prior code said that you needed to pay in person or by mail. We're changing the chapter from hotel tax to transient lodging tax. And so that will line up with what the state of Oregon calls this tax. Incorporating gender neutral references to all the positions that are referenced. Removing a filing extension provision that just has never been used. And when someone's late, it's usually late on maybe $20, $30 that they owe. And so going through a large process to request an extension, it's just inappropriate for the amount of dollars that we're talking about. We're directing legal action to be filed locally. No one has ever, we have never had to seek legal action, but if we did, we'd want to direct that action locally through the municipal court or state circuit court. And we're also adding civil enforcement language that references our chapter 1.10, which has been just a kind of ongoing thing that we've been doing to all of the chapters so that we reference back a standard enforcement process, which is important, particularly for a lot of these chapters that aren't violated very often. You don't want to have a unique enforcement process built into each one of these separate chapters so that and particularly when the chapters don't get violated very often, you might go a decade before you sort of uncover that enforcement process. And then you're kind of making up a process and you're filling in the blanks on an ad hoc basis, which is never a good way to handle an enforcement strategy. So we're harkening back to our standard enforcement language of saying any violation of this code can also be enforced under Title I, Chapter 10. So with that, I'll answer any questions that you have, or we can move forward to a public hearing, although I understand no one has signed up to speak. Oh, Mary, I think you're still muted.
Sorry. We don't have anyone signed up for public testimony, but now would be the time for public testimony if we had any. I'm not going to read the rules about public testimony because we don't have anyone signed up to do it. So I guess we'll say that this concludes the public testimony portion of the hearing because we didn't have anyone that was signed up to give public testimony. And I'll close the public testimony portion of the hearing. So I think now we would normally start deliberations, but we'll go ahead with any questions that anyone has of Will or anything specific in here that anyone has questions about. So if anyone has questions, great. Mark, I see your hand going up.
Thanks, Kate. Will, I know we talked about this a couple of meetings ago as well in preparation for the public hearing. I just want to make sure that I see three different classes of facilitators here. There's the people that are managing their short-term rental themselves. There's local entities, which might be a hotel or might be a local intermediary. And then there's the big guys, the Airbnbs and the Hampton Inns and the things like that. And I understand that this is primarily focused on making sure that we're properly negotiating with the larger entities, the Airbnbs and of the world. Is that a true statement?
Yeah. Well, it's also about simplification, and I didn't hit that component as well, so thank you for bringing this up. It's making it easier for the small operator, particularly if they use multiple different booking intermediaries. In 2018, when the state of Oregon said that booking intermediaries are required to remit, VRBO, also known as HomeAway.com, which is a subsidiary of Expedia, they started collecting and remitting. But Airbnb didn't. And there was a lot of amended returns, and there was a lot of education with operators who used both platforms to advertise their property. So this will make it consistent so they know that all intermediaries are reporting for them, and they don't have to treat the revenue differently when they don't have to even think about which booking intermediary it went through.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess my main question though is for the local booking companies, how does this change their behavior or change their requirements?
It's going to be a simplification because the taxes are going to be itemized and automatically when Airbnb is used. So before, they would have to essentially gross up their advertised rent in order to cover the tax that then would need to be taken off on the back end on their accounting books. Now that will be done on the front end and itemized directly. And so local property managers won't even have to handle that money anymore. It won't go through them.
As long as it goes through one of those big things. So like a B&B somewhere, it would be easier no matter what, right? Parts of it don't get harder and parts of it get easier. And just reading through the language, I couldn't see where it got, I didn't see a trap or anything, but there's a lot of little teeny things. And I know you've been thinking through it. So that's the question.
Yeah, it should be simpler for everyone. There was going to be some education at the beginning that everyone still needs to report. They just will report what was collected on their behalf by Airbnb. And it's a different line on the form. So they'll just turn in paper and no money, or go online and do it all online. And this is, if they've been using VRBO, this is a process they've already been doing because VRBO has been collecting and remitting for about 2 years now.
Additional questions? Megan?
So just real quick, one spelling error on page 16 of the packet. In the first paragraph, it says tent instead of rent. But just FYI. And then I guess the more of the question was on page 21, where it talks about we can enter into a contract with the Hood River County Chamber of Commerce. Is it normal to call out like a specific entity in our own code? I mean, it doesn't hurt because it's been in there for 40 years, but.
Yeah, it's been in there for a really long time. The mayor asked me about this as well before, and I think what it mostly is just a communication of policy, policy intention. I don't know if it has really any legal, it doesn't direct us to, it's a may, not a shall. And it's sort of a statement of what already exists. You're already able as a council to enter into contracts with other organizations. So I think it's more of a communication tool than any provision that actually does anything.
Just figured I'd ask. Thanks.
Yeah.
Tim, did you have a question?
I guess briefly just following up on that thread. I mean, if it's not really needed, should we have it in there?
It's been actually useful to me. When I was a new finance director here and what is this deal? Why are we sending money to the chamber? At least I see that what we've been at least doing about it and authorizing this since the 1980s. So it was a piece of historical puzzle. It's a piece of legislative record that helps know that this has been a consistent policy of the city and the council for a long time. That's where it's mostly a communication tool.
Okay. Mayor? This is Dan Cairns. Also kind of a statewide perspective, as long as the transient lodging tax has been on the books in this state, it's always directed the bulk of the proceeds to organizations that do exactly what local chambers of commerce do. So, a long time ago, well, up until recently, there haven't been any alternatives. So it's a pretty ubiquitous provision around the state that local governments that collect this Chamber of Commerce fulfills the statutory obligation in those jurisdictions. They always do, and they're eager to take the money and do their mission. So that's why it's tradition around the state, because up till now there haven't been any alternatives that completely fulfilled the statutory obligation for the tourism promotion requirement.
Thank you, Dan. Additional questions?
Well, if I could just kind of continue on just for a second. Can you, the Airbnb thing is vexing to me. Can you describe your interactions with them and your negotiations? How you came to resolve this with them?
Sure. Ever since the city of Portland and city of Santa Monica have won several court cases all the way through the Court of Appeals, forcing them to do this, it's been it's been night and day dealing with Airbnb pre and post. When I was first coming on and trying to interact with Airbnb, I couldn't get a phone call returned. I could not get an email returned. They were a black void and they were not interested in working with us or anything of the sort. But this time I was able to get on a conference call with their general counsel for the entire West Coast, one of their policy managers, and one of their tax specialists all together. And we walked through the code update, and they were completely amenable. They didn't want us to go the full City of Portland route. I think that was our negotiating leverage, where the City of Portland has a data sharing portal with them, and they talked about how much effort that has been to set up. And honestly, it's not something that I'm too interested in doing here, just for the small number of STRs that we have, and also the very, very high licensure compliance rate. We really don't have a compliance problem that Portland does. So there's basically the juice wasn't worth the squeeze there, but it did give us negotiating leverage to sort of throw that out there and then say, and then back off of the data sharing component.
Thanks. I just wanted to kind of like, thanks for providing that historical perspective. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Additional questions? Okay, I have a question on page 24 of our packet, letter H, and it talks about person. Person means an individual, partnership, firm, association, social club, fraternal organization, you know, go on and on and on about the different things that are people. And I'm wondering how that is referenced in here exactly, why we have that, because I do remember that there was some of our short-term rentals, I believe all of our short-term rentals that were going to expire eventually, not hosted home shares, but the short-term rentals that will be within, I can't remember how long it is, a couple years, maybe, those will expire. Those couldn't be transferred through some kind of a club or something. You actually have to have a person that has a tax return and a driver's license and those kind of things that... that owns something that has to get the license. So how does this jive with that?
Sure, they're different. So this is a certificate of authority to collect tax. And I believe there's a provision in here that even explicitly says this is a certificate of authority to collect. This is in no way a permit or a license. So the license, it's chapter 10 is the STR license. And that does require in the residential areas it to be the primary residence of the license holder. Not in commercial zones though. Commercial zones could have a corporation owning them.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks for that explanation. And I just saw, I think it's a typo in one section. Packet page 26, and it's under A, under 5.09.050A, and then the portion that's changed, that's highlighted in red, it says something about the amount is tent and tax will be collected. I don't think it's supposed to be tent.
Okay. Councillor Saunders, is that the same tent that you...
The same provision, yeah.
That you found, okay, right, okay. Just a typo, okay.
Okay.
Those were the only, let me just double check here and make sure I didn't mark something else, but I don't think so. No, that's all. I think it's a great cleanup and it'll make it simpler. A lot of work to do these cleanups with all the little things that have to be changed. Thanks for taking the time to do it, but good changes for the city.
Yeah, maybe I'll ask the city attorney just a quick question on process. Scribbler's errors, tent instead of rent. Dan, do we need to do anything?
No, that's not a substantive change to this ordinance, which has been posted prior to tonight's meeting. And so if the council is inclined to make a motion to approve and do a first reading tonight, there would be that correction.
So that correction would need to be in a motion?
Yeah, I'd throw it in a motion. Any other typos you might see, now's the chance.
Okay, so we've been, I've asked for questions for Will or any comments. So I guess let's, you know, those are part of the deliberations is getting information from staff. But now we do actually need to deliberate. So I guess if people want to just kind of go around and say, you know, you're generally in favor or not, and why, that would be great. So whoever wants to start, just to say we are officially doing deliberations now. Jessica?
Yeah, I didn't have any questions in it. I appreciate the cleanup. I think it's the right thing to do. So I am in favor of the ordinance.
Thanks. Mark?
Yeah, my questions were answered with respect to, you know, leveling the playing field and still looking out for the local operators. So I also am in favor of the ordinance. So, and thanks, Will, for all the work. So,
Megan?
Sorry. Yes. Yeah, so this all seems like good efforts to move us into the modern era and hopefully make it easier for folks in the community and for our staff. So I'm in favor of the changes.
Yep, I agree with all that's that's been said there. I guess I'm still just a little disappointed that Airbnb had to be sued to actually have them come along with this. But I appreciate the changes, and that seems like a positive development. Thank you.
Eric?
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with a lot of what has been said. I think I actually may, as a formal matter, recuse myself from the voting due to an indirect business relationship through my employer with one of the companies that was referenced tonight. So I will recuse myself from the voting, but I philosophically am opposed to nothing here.
Okay, thanks for that disclosure, Eric. And I think this is a good thing that we're doing. So do we have a motion? There's a, we have a motion on, let me make sure these are the same.
I can do one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I move to adopt ordinance 2055 with the correction noted in 5.09.050A. And provide first reading by title only during the work session under city recorder.
Okay, we have a motion.
I second that motion.
Okay, great. And Jessica has seconded the motion, and that motion is to adopt ordinance 2055 and provide first reading by title only during the work session under city recorder. I'll do roll call vote on this. Megan?
Yes.
Tim?
Aye.
Mark?
Yes.
Jessica?
Aye.
And Eric?
Abstain.
Okay. Gladys wasn't able to be here tonight, and I'm just stating that for people that are on a telephone call and can't see what's happening here. That will just move to the work session under City Recorder.
Kate, do you need to vote?
Pardon? Chair votes aye. Thank you, Megan. Getting ahead of myself. All right, great. Has anyone come on for the CAT bus presentation? Jonathan, do you know?
Mayor, none of the names that I've been given are here. I don't see Ty or Hans-Peter. Okay. I sent them an email before we started the last session and have not received a reply. Will you CC them that just to verify?
Okay.
So I'm uncertain what to do.
I think we'll just move forward without the presentation. I think in there, pretty self-explanatory that they're trying to put, they're just going to install some solar panels and apply for some grants, and wanted to let the City Council know about that. So I think the presentation itself has achieved that goal.
Yeah, we had that in our packet, so that's great. So we're going to go ahead. Let's see.
Madam Mayor, before you move on, I mentioned this at the last meeting, but I would just request to be excused. I may try to come back, but I had an unavoidable conflict starting at 6:30.
No problem, Eric. Thank you so much for joining in on what you could.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, so the public hearing for that is now done. We're gonna go ahead and open the work session. Do we have any agenda additions or corrections?
See, we moved the ordinance to the work session, but I believe it actually should have been moved to the regular City Council meeting where the business is done. Either Dan or Jen.
Yes, because the ordinance will have to be a voice vote for adoption of the ordinance. I think it's normally done under the recorder's section of the agenda.
So we did say under work. Recorder.
Yeah.
Did we say work session? But we said City Recorder, so that was kind of a.
we said both. Do we need to move it to the actual meeting as a motion, or?
Why don't you go ahead and do that just to dot all of the I's and cross all the T's, because you were in the work session at the time and it didn't make sense to move it to the same place where you were. Too many moving parts.
Yeah, we were in public hearing and then we moved it to work session.
Okay, so do I just need to move it, or do I need to do the adopt as well?
Move it to the recorder's section for a first reading and adoption.
Okay, well, I'm gonna,
The regular meeting.
Got it. I move to adopt ordinance 2055 with the correction noted earlier and provide first reading by title only during the regular business meeting. Is that correct? Under City Recorder?
That'll do it.
I'm unmuted for some reason, so I'll just second. Yeah.
Okay. So Megan has made that motion to move that to the regular session under City Recorder, and Mark has seconded. So we'll go through the names again here. Tim?
Hi.
Megan?
Yes.
Jessica?
Hi.
Mark? Can you unmute, Mark?
I figured out where the button was and I said yes.
Okay, great. Thanks. And chair votes aye. So now that is moved to the regular session under City Recorder. Great, thank you. So now we did not have anything under work session then. Is that correct, Will?
That's correct.
Okay. So we're going to adjourn the work session, as we had no business under that. We're going to open the regular council meeting. Any additions or corrections?
Just the reading of ordinance 2055 by title only under city recorder.
Okay. So we have a consent agenda with the addition. The consent agenda has a council meeting minute, two sets of council meeting minutes, and the purchase of two hybrid police vehicles on that consent agenda. Does anyone have questions about that before we do the consent agenda? Megan?
I just, real quick, since I think maybe I'm remembering wrong, but the like 100,000 is generally when we're buying the full like police equipped interceptors. Are we expecting that like with one of them being just a normal RAV4 that it would be that high, or is that just what was in the budget? So.
Yeah. So the police interceptors are usually a bit more than 50,000, maybe more like 55, 58. Neil, do you have the quotes?
The actual vehicles themselves, they're all going to be equipped and outfitted though. They're all going to have lights. They're all going to have radios, in-car video systems. The detective vehicle won't have an in-car video system, but other than that, they'll be completely outfitted. And the RAV4 is about $10,000 less than the Ford Explorer because it is a design police vehicle, where the RAV4 is going to be a civilian model hybrid.
So I guess we are expecting that they will cost about the $100,000.
It will be about $100,000, probably a little bit less than change. You know, we try to make sure we don't exceed when we go to budget. And when you do budget, new car prices, availability, they don't have them out yet. So my goal is, I've never been over. I've usually always been under, sometimes well under. So.
Okay. Thanks, Neil.
Yep.
Mark?
Little question for Neil. You're able to resell two vehicles then on the...
We'll sell the two vehicles. One is actually broke and motor doesn't work. And, you know, sorry if anybody's a Dodge lover, but about 90,000 on those Dodges and they pretty much junk. So yeah, we will be surplusing that, and there'll be a Tahoe that'll be surplused. So at the same time. So what we normally do is like the best of the vehicles, we try to roll those into a training vehicle. So when people are at the academy or go to training, they can use that in lieu of paying per diem mileage. And so we have a Tahoe V8 that we're going to get rid of that is due. It's well over its time.
Gotcha. And then my other comment, Kate, is just for, you know, what Mari Ruth mentioned, that this isn't these police cars or mental health stuff. It's a discussion we're starting to have now, and it will continue on, and you know, how we prioritize stuff and budget stuff will, you know, that's already part of the discussion, and I look forward to it anyway. So just so that people are listening know that this isn't, approving this isn't a vote against, you know, some other services in the community. So but I just wanted to say that. So.
Thanks, Mark. Additional questions on the consent agenda? Okay. Do we have a motion?
I would move we approve the consent agenda.
I second that.
I have a motion from Megan and a second from Jessica to approve the consent agenda that also had the addition of ordinance 2025 on it.
That shouldn't be on the consent agenda.
Oh, that's right. We have to do that by city recorder. Okay, so we just have the two items, minutes and two sets of minutes and the hybrid police vehicles. Tim?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Jessica?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Consent agenda is passed. regular business items. Department heads, let's see here. I'm just gonna call people to see if we have anything. Chief Holstey, do you have anything?
I have nothing, Mayor.
Okay. Dustin, do you have anything?
No, Mayor, I have nothing for tonight, thank you.
Okay. Wade Seaborn, do you have anything from Public Works?
I don't have anything either, thanks.
And Chief Damien?
I have nothing as well, thank you.
Okay.
Meryl, I have one thing from finance.
Okay, great.
Just let everyone know that we have finished up contract negotiations with MIG to continue forward the lights project. So you'll see that that's going to go to the Urban Renewal Agency Committee, and I hope to have the packet out midweek. And then they'll add their recommendation for, against, or change, and then you'll see this as you're all members of the Urban Renewal Agency Board, hopefully at your next agency meeting in September. So no details, just we'll wait for the packet to come out, but I wanted to let you know that that's coming.
Great, thank you. City Recorder, Jen.
Your Honor, I'd like to entertain a motion for the first reading of Ordinance 2055 by title only.
I move we read Ordinance 2055 for the first time by title only.
Megan has made a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
And Jessica's made a second.
Councillor Saunders?
Yes.
Councillor Cunahan?
Yes.
Councillor Mehta?
Aye.
Councillor Zanmiller?
Yes.
Your Honor?
Yes.
Ordinance 2055, an ordinance amending Title V of the Hood River Municipal Code by amending Chapter 9, retitled Transient Lodging Tax.
Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, it's mayor and council call. Couple things. The emergency operation center is not, we are not meeting now twice a week regarding COVID. Emergency operations are really for emergencies, which are really supposed to be short term, not long term. And so they've decided to not have those meetings. We were kind of winding down with the information that we were kind of sharing each time, and it didn't feel like it was as much of a crisis and emergency as it was at the beginning when we were really worried about food. We didn't know what people were doing about masks. Things were changing so quickly. I think right now we are still on the watch list. The county is on the watch list, which means additional help from the Oregon Health Authority to help the people that are doing tracing for our county is happening. And then, you know, look and see what the numbers are. I believe it's the end of this week will be the end of the 3 weeks. I'm not sure about that. I think it's the end of this week though. Then to make a determination whether we will stay where we are with being in phase two or not. Nobody's going to phase three, but it'd be whether we went back to phase one. So, and if it needs to start back up because of COVID or any other reason, fire or something, it will. And the health department, I believe, is still doing public service announcements as needed, but we aren't having meetings twice a week now. Megan?
I guess just with that, do we feel like we have a good, connection to the county to communicate ongoing issues or concerns as this probably continues for the next year or so?
I have a good rapport with Mike Oates, with the chair, and actually in the last week, since we haven't been doing this for about a week now, I've been thinking, gosh, it sure would be nice to have something written, even if we don't have a full meeting, that came from public health that might be just, you know, a few bullet points on where we stand. And so I'm going to ask Mike if you know, that could be something that we could ask the health department to at least keep us updated on that. Not that we need to have the meetings, but, and, you know, and then if food security becomes more of an issue, you know, we may start the meetings back up or something like that. But I have a good rapport with Mike, and I'm sure he would talk to them about that. And Rachel also, and Will can talk to Jeff about the possibility of relaying that to the health department.
I'll just add, I know Rachel and Jeff are in close contact often. And even just this afternoon, I got an update email from Barbara Ayers to the whole, there's a whole local government listserv. And she gave some updates about some COVID type policies just an hour ago. So the communication is still flowing.
Awesome, thank you.
The Bi-State Bridge Committee met last week, and I believe we're probably headed in the direction of a more official bi-state council in the next 6 to 9 months. That's kind of looks like that's what the direction is going to be. Also within the next maybe hopefully 6 months, we're going to have an RFI out for a public-private partnership proposal to have people bring proposals to look at just what that might be, just as another option. There's talk of, you know, grants and getting money from both states and the feds, but, you know, that remains to be seen how much money is going to be happening for anything with COVID and the economy and everything. So I think that just getting our ducks in a row for this private-public partnership might be a direction that we have to go, but we're just going to check it out. And the whole group really wanted to do this by a more official, not just a working group, but a more official bi-state commission, I guess you'd call it. Not exactly like the Gorge Commission, but kind of like the Gorge Commission, where you have people from cities on both sides, counties on both sides, states involved on both sides, because there'd be a lot more possibilities of getting state money from both sides and federal money from both sides than if the port is the only ones that are working on this project. So the whole group felt the Washington side people really want to have a stake in it, and they're willing to put in the work and the time for that. So it looks like it may be heading in that direction in the next 6 to 9 months. I think that's all I have. Tim?
Oh, I guess just to follow up on that discussion. So the private public partnership part of this, yeah, obviously there would be a lot of things that we would have to know about that. And I'm just trying to get a feel. For some reason, it just makes me uncomfortable having a private entity in control of something that's essentially interstate traffic. You know, it's a pretty crucial tie for our city and Washington and a lot of the folks that work over there. And it's just, I don't know, I'm just trying to figure out exactly what, you know, what something like that would look like, and what the other analogs or case examples would be where something like that has worked in a situation like that. I'm just throwing that out there as kind of a discussion point, and not necessarily for now or whatever, just kind of a concern, because it seems unusual to me. But so, you know, and again, I don't know, does the bridge committee, do they publish minutes or anything like that we can review, or?
There's some notes that are taken, and then do kind of just general information at the next meeting about kind of things that are next that we came up with at the last meeting. And Kevin Greenwood has those.
Right.
from the port. And I think that, you know, if we have an RFI from private entities, I mean, it's not going to be just one. I mean, they're going to ask for an RFI, and hopefully numerous groups would come forward. But there are examples of this being done in the last 10 years. Actually, there's quite a few examples of it being done. And kind of some, and these may be way off, but they were kind of talking about the toll, you know, the project being $300 million, and for each $100 million, it's a dollar to cross the bridge. Mm-hmm. You know, if you could get grants, you could get public money for part of it, that'd be great. And if the private part could be a certain amount, but that's what the RFI is about. And one of the other things that's going to be happening in the next 5 years is the bridge is going to need some huge upkeep done on it in about 5 years. And we talked about this at the last meeting. And by the end of that 5 years, if we don't have something kind of figured out, the port is going to need to you know, bond a lot more money to do repairs. So that money could go towards a new bridge if we're ready to go. And if not, then those new tolls for a new bridge are going to have to include the cost of those bonds for the old bridge. So we can't put this off for 20 years. We've got, you know, it just doesn't make sense to throw this old money onto the old bridge when we know we need a new one. So we're trying to gear up for different sessions of Congress right now, both states, the feds. But if things don't start happening in a fairly rapid course here, we need to look at different alternatives. So that's why we need to at least look at the RFI for the private.
No, and I understand that. I mean, it's with private companies, there's always a profit that needs to be made.
Yeah, I mean,
that always makes me a little, because there's a lot of, you know, and some of the discussions that we had prior to the form of this new committee were, you know, around the importance of keeping bridge tolls low for the folks that have to travel from Washington to work over here or vice versa. And, you know, the folks that have to do those type of things are usually not in the best, probably the least able to actually incur increased costs associated with increased tolls. So yeah. In as much as we can work with, whomever to keep those tolls low, I think that's all to our benefit. And I guess just moving on with the emergency committee part of this, I can understand the kind of dissolution of that committee and what it was intended for. But I agree with the need for continued communication, because it seems like the situation right now is probably as bad as it's been, even before, you know, the original formation of this. So I guess I'm just trying to caution from us all becoming numb to this situation. And it seems like it's like the new normal, but it's not normal at all. So I think that there's a big need for continued communication. One can think that, well, you know, things are happening, they're going along, everything seems to be okay, but, you know, the rate of infection right now is causing a lot of people, a lot of kids, you know, we're not going to be able to start up school, you know, so that's a big deal for people. So there is a cost associated with continuing down the path that we've been going on. So anyways, those are just kind of my thoughts on that.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah. Jessica?
Yeah, I knew there were some updates to share for the ACT committee that Eric's on, and since he's not here, I'll at least share that they're at a point where we could comment for how the next funding allocation is done. So it's the STIP, the Statewide Transportation Improvement. I think, I can't remember what STIP stands for. And I deal with a lot of acronyms. but it's for the 2024 to 2027 funding. And I know so we have Hood River County has three members on the Area Commission on Transportation, and Eric is our appointee. And I know they're working on a letter. So I guess just to flag that for us all, but I'll also share a
joint letter, Jessica.
Yeah. Also, we are continuing to try to get out the Business Oregon funds that we got for grants for businesses. We have set this Friday as the deadline based on when we needed to get those funds out. As of right now, we've only given out not even like half of what we had available for Hood River County. And it's mostly, you know, there's, it's because of some of the requirements that Business Oregon had put on those dollars about that you couldn't have received the EIDL, EIDL, or you couldn't have received the PPP funds. There was also some seasonality issues that have caused problems for some businesses in terms you have to show a revenue loss, but maybe they weren't quite at that point, but they are now. And the Business Oregon has heard from many other people around the state. They're having this issue and they've gotten rid of some of these stipulations, basically the federal ones. And the most recent pots of money that they've given out, but at least for this current pot of money that we have for the region, they have not lifted those restrictions yet. So
Jessica, is there a new pitch that we should be giving? You know, because I talk to local businesses and most of them are going, I don't know, you know, so there's sort of a application fatigue that I sense. I don't know, but if there's a new pitch that we can make as city councilors, we as individuals, you know, I'm happy to run it up to.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Mark. We've been doing quite a lot of even just like cold calling people to say, you know, hey, I'm not a scam, but I have free money for you, which really is a difficult conversation to convince we're not. I would say, so we're hopeful that we'll get in future rounds. I've heard that there might be pots of money specifically dedicated again to entities like MCED and that they won't have these stipulations on it. So I'm kind of hopeful that maybe this round ends and we don't get it all out, but maybe there's a future round, in which case we'll have to figure out how to address that application fatigue and encourage people to apply again. So I don't think I have a specific action for you, but thank you, Mark. And that's it.
Thanks, Jessica. Mark?
I don't have anything especially funny or deep to share, so I think I'm good. So.
Okay. Megan?
Yeah, just two things. One, so I failed to make this explicit in some past meetings, but I did just want to say for the community that I do really value and respect having Council Rivera as a co-counselor and as a community member, and make clear that I stand with her and her right to share her opinions on this board and be a member of this board without any harassment or intimidation. And I will do better at showing that support in the future. And then I did just kind of want to touch base with Will and see where we were at with the, I know we got money from the state that we're going to use for COVID assistance, you know, businesses, nonprofits, utility customers. I was wondering where that was at or what the process was looking like.
Sure, thanks for that question. So there's two pots of money to separate in our minds. And then we have the $250,000 that is budgeted from the one-time suspension of tax from the urban, from the Waterfront and Heights urban renewal districts. And that was meant specifically to address some of the issues that Councilor Mehta brought up when she was talking about all the strings that are attached with different sources of money. And if it's local and it's general fund, like how this one-time influx of about $250,000 is, we have the ability to get rid of all of that red tape and do something exactly what the city wants to do. So we brought that to the council as part during kind of budget season. And what heard what with a kind of a broad framework of a third to nonprofits, individual assistance, and business assistance. And at that time I heard that was wanting a little bit more detail from council, and also her comments around maybe it wouldn't be the worst thing if we waited through till fall and saw how the city's revenue picture was shaping up before we started sending out some big checks of our discretionary dollars. So that's separate from the CARES Act funding, which we also need to determine what to do with it. The CARES Act sent Oregon's share of the CARES Act is $1.38 billion. And there's some legislative direction from the Congress that said about 45% of that should go to local governments, but that wasn't binding. If 45% of it went to local governments, that'd be $625 million. The Oregon legislature so far has only earmarked $400 million for local governments. The city of Hood River's share of that is about $300,000, of which we've already spent and been reimbursed for about $100,000 in COVID, direct COVID-19 expenditures. So that was our spring break lunch program, some backfill OT for some sick leave, all the modifications to our work environment. Those are some examples of things that we've already been reimbursed for. So we do have remaining about $200,000 from the CARES Act monies separate from our local monies. And I'm working through what we should do with that. Obviously, we're going to have some more city expenses between now and December 30th, which is when this money needs to be spent by, as well as we need to think through that if there's money left over from other cities, that might get pooled and redistributed to the cities that are spending it. And if the Oregon legislature wants to get closer to that 45% dedication, that could also mean some additional monies to the city. So that's separate and distinct from our local 250, but it could be used in basically the same way. So I'm still in contact with Paul Lindberg, who's kind of my contact with the United Way, and I told him we'd really that the council. I got the impression from comments that we like a little bit more specificity around a specific proposal for how that money could be used. And then also just coming out of last Friday's economic resiliency team meeting that McKed facilitates, we spent a lot of time talking about childcare needs, and that prompted a call to Nancy Patton, who's the director of Childcare Partners over there. And I'm gonna continue discussions with her to see also how maybe CARES Act might be plugged into her work so that we can help facilitate more people becoming childcare providers and helping with licensing costs and things like that. So that's kind of the ideas that are in the works, and I hope to bring something back more concrete for council decision. That being said, any additional comments, directions, values, intent of the council is always helpful to hear.
Thanks, Will. Also, just on the lines of what you were talking about just now with the money, when would we get an update on where we are on our finances? Would it be like September or the end of September?
I'm going to try to do it before then. If I can at all manage it, I'll have one to you at the next meeting that just told you how we closed out. FY 1920 will be unaudited figures, still very much in the process of closing the books. But I think I can give you a pretty good rough look by next meeting. I'm cautiously optimistic that we came in a little bit better than what was in the budget as far as carry forward into the next fiscal year. But we're still right in the thick of closing the books. So I don't want to create any news right now.
Okay, thanks. Did you have additional things, Megan?
Nothing specific. I guess more and Will wanting to hear some thoughts. And this is going to be just broad because I don't know a lot about the specific proposals, but I guess I'm definitely feeling like pretty much all of the federal support is gone or is going away really soon. And so I feel like there's just a lot of pain coming down the pike really soon that I'd like to see some of this money getting out to help the community, you know, in the near term. I know we've got some we're maybe holding off for a little later to see where we are, but if we've got some money from the State CARES Act distribution, and I can't imagine we need all of it, it'd be nice to make that useful for some other folks.
Just add one other thing that I forgot to mention is also homelessness, working with Sarah Kellens as for ways we can plug that in for folks experiencing homelessness. So just wanted to say that was also top of mind.
So Kate, are we going to schedule part of the next meeting to talk about this stuff? It seems like council call is an odd time to provide input to it. Although I appreciate Megan's input.
Sorry.
No, all good. I wasn't prepared to say, oh, what about this and this and this? I like some of the ideas that were brought up here, but I think half an hour in the next council meeting, if we can fit it in, would be a good place to do that. And I'm hearing that that's good timing for multiple things. I don't know.
And I don't know, I know that this meeting was a fairly light agenda meeting. I'm not sure what we have on next time's meeting already, but let's think about whether we can add that on. I know that we did want to see where are we with our finances before we got too free with the money. But if it looks like we're going to, we may not make a decision, but if we have a little bit more money, a little bit more information about where we are financially, throw the additional ideas out there, get information from Paul Lindbergh that could be come back to us. You know, we might be able to narrow this down a little bit better in the next month. So I'm not sure about next meeting for sure for any decisions, but we could, let's be thinking about the ideas that we have at least, so we could try to get a few minutes on the agenda for that part of it at least. I think that's a good idea.
I'll just add, in between now and then, if council members know of a blind spot that maybe is not receiving any assistance, and you want to make me and Rachel aware of that as we're building proposals and in the background to bring to you, that's very welcome at any time.
Yeah, don't send them to each other. Make sure you send them to Rachel and Will.
And I don't know a ton about this, but I assume, Will, you've been following any of the Business Oregon potential matching programs, or if those are all done at this point, I'm not sure.
That's what McKed is working with. That's the ones where they're having trouble getting the money. It's not a lack of funds. It's the restrictions on the use is really the choke point on that.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's everyone. So we will adjourn the meeting for this evening. It is 7:09. Good job, you guys.
Is this the record?
Close, I think. I think we did one potentially that was like 35 minutes, but this is pretty good. We didn't have a heavy agenda though, but thank you everyone. Good meeting.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Stay cool.
Yeah.